Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk is entitled Questions and Answers with Lama Kathy and Back to Buddhist Basics, Part 1. The first part of this talk answers questions from viewers of Lama Kathy's video webcasts and covers the topics of the traditional Tibetan Buddhist three-year retreat and meditation practice. In the second part of the talk, Lama Kathy covers the first part of a three-part series on Back to Buddhist Basics, in which she reviews the three levels, often called the three yanas, of the Buddha's teaching. This audio was drawn from her video webcast from home. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Thanks again to all of you for coming and being part of our live audience today, and thanks to all the people who sent in questions. The last few weeks we've been doing topics about the pandemic and how we're responding to the pandemic and how people are feeling and how they're coping and how we can use meditation to help with all of that. So this week I thought it would be good to start with some questions and to find out what people were interested in knowing. So I will not be able to see all of the questions that are coming up on the live chat, but I'm going to see. I don't think there's a live chat on YouTube, so I think we're going to have to rely on questions coming in through Facebook. And if you don't get a question asked today, you can send in questions to me by email at lamakathy, LAMAKATHY, at columbusktc.org. So this will give you a way to be in touch and to ask questions. So we've had three episodes so far, and I'd say the main theme has been trying to find ways to cope in the midst of the pandemic. And so what we've talked about already, we've talked about relaxation exercises, we've talked about meditation, we've talked about compassion meditation and mantra meditation. So we've talked about those three. And I think that next week we might get to a series of talks that I'm going to be calling Back to Basics, where we actually review all of those teachings, like what is meditation for and why do we do it? And then also, how does compassion meditation work? How does it allow us to learn compassion? And then we will talk about mantra and visualization as well. So that's what we're going to be doing a little bit today. We're going to be talking a little bit today about these things. And then starting next week, we'll have some more hands-on instruction and that sort of thing. So the first question was about the Easter holiday, because the Christian Easter holiday is coming up, and many of our Buddhist friends have Christian family members, and those Christian family members may have needs of their own. And so how do we as Buddhists relate to the Christian holiday of Easter and so on? And the question reads, as we prepare for the Easter holidays with our family, kids, and grandkids, can you help us reframe the Christian celebration through the lens of Buddhist thought on retreat, suffering, death, redemption, and resurrection? I think that if we look at the teachings of Buddhism, the main teaching that I guess you could say is central to all of us, and that is that we all have Buddha nature, meaning we all have a mind that has the potential to find peace and stability and wisdom and compassion. So peace, stability, wisdom, compassion, those qualities are already inside of us. We don't have to go looking elsewhere for them. That we can actually bring those out from within ourselves. And so the practices of meditation are aimed at allowing us to uncover that Buddha nature and to live it out. So I would say that you could say there's continual resurrection in Buddhist teaching, because we can always remake ourselves. We can always find a way to recreate the world that we're in, and recreate our being. Our very being can be recreated moment to moment. And this is how it works. When you practice meditation, you begin to notice your thinking processes. You begin to notice the thoughts that you're having, and you begin to notice how those thoughts rise and fall. So you're meditating, and then a thought about something comes up. And for a moment, you're in the world of that thought. And then you come back from that thought. And then from there, you have another thought. And then you're born in the world of that thought. So what this means is there is a continuous process of birth and rebirth always. So birth and rebirth is always happening in Buddhism. We're always being reborn somewhere doing something. And this is why we train ourselves with meditation. We train ourselves with meditation so that we can notice our thought processes. And once we notice our thought processes, we can begin to take hold of them and to begin to work with them in a constructive way. And the main example of this is our emotions. Because let's say that somebody has said something terrible to you and made you feel bad. So you could sit and just stew about that feeling and just be in that feeling for hours or days. But what if when you felt that feeling, you took one step backwards away from that feeling and said, I am feeling something. I am feeling angry, or I am feeling hurt. And if you can say, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling hurt, that is evidence that you have actually backed up one step. All you have to do is back up one step. And that one step is to disengage from the story that you're telling yourself about what's happening. Because there's the thing that's happening, that person just said that thing to you, and then there's the story behind that thing that the person said to you. Like, what's our dynamic? Are they getting the better of me? Am I a fool? Et cetera, et cetera. And that story is the part that we can begin to make an impact on right away once we learn how to practice meditation. Because when we're practicing meditation, we allow all thoughts to come and go. Thoughts arise, thoughts disappear, thoughts arise, thoughts disappear. And then sometimes when we get distracted by that thought, we might be with that thought for just a little while. But then when we recognize that we're thinking, and we say thinking, we let go of the thought, and then we return our attention to the breath for a fresh start. When we do that, we notice the thought process. And what this does is it allows us to become aware of our thoughts in everyday life, and all the time we're aware of our thoughts. At first, that's a little bit weird because we're not used to being that one step backward from our thoughts. But if we can take that one step backward saying, I feel this, then if we can do that, then that means that we can begin to make a change in how we feel. So for example, in mantra practice, we use the names of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as mantra. The one I explained during our first gathering together was Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And according to the book by Bokhar Rinpoche, Chenrezig, Lord of Love, which I have on my shelf, and it's a lovely short book. It's a lovely short book about Chenrezig practice. And in that book, he says that the word Om refers to the enlightened body of the Buddha, and the word Hung refers to the enlightened mind of the Buddha. And then Mani Padme, Mani means jewel, and Padme means lotus. And so basically it's praising the body and mind of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion. So that's what it's about. That's why we say the name Om Mani Padme Hum. So you can actually use that as a replacement thought for the one that you're having. So instead of being angry and working on a story like they're mean to me and they're bad to me, you can take a break from that thought and be reborn for just a moment in the world of compassion by reciting the name of Jewel Lotus, which is one of the ways of saying the name of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion. So you can, by reciting that, put a replacement thought in. I was talking to one of my Dharma friends on the phone this week, and she was saying that sometimes she feels anxious. And I think part of it is because we do tend to fall into catastrophic thinking when things are going wrong in our lives. And so that catastrophic thinking can take over. And we can begin to feel like everything is going wrong and the story really gets big and out of control. And so one of the things we need to do is recognize how we're feeling. And by recognizing how we're feeling, we can back up and then put that replacement thought in its place. And in Buddhism, we try to make those replacement thoughts all about the compassion and wisdom of the Buddha, because those are our basic nature. So to go all the way back to the beginning of the question, which is how do Buddhists look at the Easter holiday? And the idea is that the story of Easter is the story of rebirth and the potential rebirth of all beings in a realm of happiness. And so for us as Buddhists, we can take rebirth in a realm of happiness anytime. Anytime we take that step backward from being the center of attention, taking that step backward and saying, what is my real capability here? What is my real potential here? What is my real possibility here? And so once we begin to recognize our real potential and possibility, and that potential and possibility actually has stability, compassion, and wisdom in it, then, and if we can have that, we can have that wisdom, compassion, and stability, my goodness, we could become a Buddha just for about maybe 10 seconds, you know, but at least we would be a Buddha for 10 seconds, which is better than being our confused and angry self right this minute. And as we train in these methods, then we become more familiar with them. And as we become more familiar with them, they come to our hands more quickly. So that's my Easter message for today. Pastor Kathy's Easter message for today. I've been hearing from some of my pastor friends. They're doing as well as they can with the fact that they can't have everybody together in their churches. They're doing as best they can. And we're doing as best we can at the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling Buddhist Center by providing Sunday prayers and meditation and classes and all of that online, and also these Dharma talks at 1 o'clock. So thanks for being here. Now, the other thing that I talked about last week that people were interested in hearing about was about the three-year retreat. Because I mentioned last week that Buddhist teachers train in the four different traditions of Tibetan Buddhism. They have different methods of training their teachers. And one of the methods in our tradition, our Karmakaji tradition, is called the three-year retreat. And one of our Columbus KTC friends, Adam Berner, has just graduated from the three-year retreat, and now we're going to be calling him Lama Adam as soon as we can get him back into Columbus, because he's staying at Karma Ling right now because of all the stay-at-home orders, both here and in New York State. They have stay-at-home orders, so he's still hanging out at the retreat center, and we'll get here when he can. But he's just finished, and so he'll be teaching at Columbus KTC, hopefully in the future as well. And then we also already have Lama Tom, who did the three-year retreat at Karma Ling also, and he's teaching at Columbus KTC. So, but people are curious because they wonder, well, why 3 years and why retreat and so forth and so on? And the person asked the questions, who's qualified to do one? And how do you do the retreat? And then what do you do after retreat? And so this question as to who can go and so forth, that one's fairly easy to answer is that in order to go on the three-year retreat, you have to qualify. And to qualify, there's our three-year retreat center has a list of qualifications, and you can look them up online at Carme Ling by searching Carme Ling, K-A-R-M-E, second word, L-I-N-G, retreat center. And then you'll be directed to their website, and on their website, they have a full list of the things. For one thing, you have to learn how to read Tibetan script so that you can read Tibetan prayer books in the original language. I'm not a language person. In fact, I think I've forgotten like the 4 years of French that I took in college. I think I forgot it all. But so I was worried, but I didn't have to learn how to speak Tibetan. I just needed to learn how to read the letters. And if you can learn how to read the letters, then it's okay, even if you don't understand the grammar, as long as you know how to read the script. So that's the first requirement. The second requirement is that you have the necessary funds to pay for the retreat. It's been there have been different costs for it over the years, and so you'll have to look that up to see what the current costs. And so that's the current idea about that. And then also besides having the Tibetan language and the fees for the retreat, then you also have to do some of the preliminary practices. The main practice of our Karmakaju tradition is a meditation called Maha Mudra. Maha means great, and Mudra means seal, like the seal on a document. And Maha Mudra practice takes some preparation. You have to, before you meditate on the nature of your mind, then it's important to have all of the preparations done. And the preparations are designed to remove obstacles within our mind and to remove obstacles from our spiritual practice. And so between all of these things, these preliminaries may take several weeks, several months, or several years to complete. It's called Nundro. And Nundro in Tibetan literally means that which goes before, and it has to do with our preparation and clearing away some of those obstacles and obscurations. So in order to get ready for the three-year retreat, you have a lot of obstacles to clear away in your own mind. And many of the obstacles we have to clear away in our own mind is ideas about being some big deal because you get to do a three-year retreat and then become a teacher. It's kind of difficult. You both have to do the retreat, but not be too worried about what's going to happen to you afterward. So in any case, that's the preparation. But you also have to be ready in a material sense. You have to be ready to leave your life behind for 3 years. If you know, this is why most people who have children do not do the three-year retreat until their children are of an age that they can be independent. And so you have to take care of all of your things. You know, in fact, it's best to go into retreat after you've paid off all your debts and after your family's situated and they won't have immediate need for you. So that's a little bit about the preparation and who can do it. And then you also have to have permission from the retreat masters. So that process is going on now because at Carme Ling, the three-year retreat begins every 4 years. And then there's a six-month gap between the end of one retreat and the beginning of the next. And the way to remember the Carme Ling calendar and schedule is to remember that they are every 4 years, just like the presidential elections in the United States. So this year we're having a presidential election this year. So this is the year that people will be going in to three-year retreat. The last group just got out and the next group is going to go in the fall. And so if you don't have all those things together, you can slowly get them together. And what I tell people is, even if you don't think you're going to have the opportunity to do a long retreat in this lifetime, if you have the aspiration, just hold that in your heart, because I think on my previous episode, I was talking about how I wanted to do the 3-year retreat from the moment that I heard about the 3-year retreat existing. I wanted to do one. And that as soon as I finished my Nundro, I went to my teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, and I said, "Rinpoche, can I do the retreat?" And he said, "No, your situation just is not going to permit that right now." And so I was disappointed, but I set it aside. And then after a while, I said to him, I still just can't forget wanting to do it. Is it okay to want to do it?" So these are the kinds of things that you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about doing any Dharma thing. You might want to do a long retreat. You might want to do a weekend retreat. You might want to go to a special course. You might want to go and see the spots of pilgrimage of the Buddha in India. So you may have these ideas, but in order to turn them into reality, you have to hold on to your aspiration, because that's what Rinpoche told me when I went to him and said, "I can't forget this aspiration." He said, "Always keep it in your heart. Never stop wanting to do your long retreat. And eventually you'll pull together the situation to actually do it. And even if you don't get to do it in this lifetime, you'll be able to do it in the future." So that's why it's important to hold these aspirations. And also, if you hold the aspiration, it will prevent you from feeling badly about yourself. And it will prevent you from feeling badly about other people. Because sometimes when people get to do the things that we don't get to do, we feel a little jealous. And that jealousy is actually problematic for us. So because it makes us go on those crazy stories that just keep us going in circles and not going anywhere positive or in a forward direction. So what we need to do is we need to think about our aspirations and make them clearly to ourselves, and then hold on to those and keep making those and refreshing those aspirations. Now, in the questions on the chat on Facebook, someone asked if there was a good Tibetan language program. There are Tibetan language programs at some universities, but the I think for a 3-year retreat, I think the best one is tibetanlanguage.org. The words Tibetan language, all one word, and that Tibetan language, tibetanlanguage.org, or it's either tibetanlanguageinstitute.org or tibetanlanguage.org. But you can put that in your search engine, the browser of your choice, the search engine of your choice, and you'll be taken to the Tibetan Language Institute, which is headquartered in Montana. And that's where Lama David Curtis is teaching from his home. And he teaches via virtual lessons just like these. And it's a reasonable cost. And I've known at least 3 people who learned using his system, and it was enough for a 3-year retreat. So Lama David Curtis was asked by his teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, to teach Tibetan. So that's a little bit about getting ready for the retreat. Somebody said, "What do you do after retreat?" Well, a lot of what you do after retreat is going to depend on your living situation. For example, some people go back to careers that they left behind in order to do the retreat. Some people go back to the families they left behind when they went to do the retreat. And some people will go back to create something new for themselves. They won't have a place to go back to or a family to go back to, and they'll actually work out their own lives based on their practice. Because interestingly enough, when you finish a long retreat like that, what you do is you actually become useful to others. Those of you who are familiar with Buddhism know about the Bodhisattva vow, and that vow is that we vow that we will benefit all sentient beings. And Kempo Carter Rinpoche, when we got out of 3-year retreat, said, "Well, now you have some extra tools in order to benefit sentient beings. So now that you have completed the retreat, you're given the title of Lama," and the word Lama, La means, it refers to the Tibetan phrase Lanama Depa, which means insurpassable. And Ma, it's like mother. So the insurpassable parent for sentient beings is the Lama. And so that's what we do. He said, now that you have been given this title, he said, you only have one function from now until you die. And he said, and that's to connect people to their inner spirituality. And for those who are of the karmic predisposition for Buddhist practice, you're to connect them to Dharma practice. And so that's been my job for the last 24 years. In fact, at the end of May, I'll be observing the 24th anniversary of getting out of 3-year retreat. And I just like, where did the time go? But I'm really happy to have had 24 years to serve everybody who I've met and talked to. So I thank you for all of that. So as people who have the financial wherewithal can support themselves, some people are what are called bivocational lamas, where they have to have a day job and then they teach the Dharma on their weekends and in the evenings in order to take care of people. So that's a little bit about what people do after retreat. Right now, there are not very many Buddhist monasteries operating in our Kagyu tradition in the United States. So there's very little of a living situation for people to go into. So most people, Kempo Rinpoche's idea was that we would all serve, all of us lamas would serve the communities of the centers that Kempo Rinpoche created. He said, why bring Tibetan lamas over from Asia when we can train lamas who live in the United States, who understand the culture and who can speak to the people here in this country. And so what I call us, the Western lamas, our function is to be cultural translators. We translate culturally what we understand of Dharma, and we translate it. We can't translate the language, all of us, because my Tibetan's not, I have like no Tibetan. So, but what I can do is I can take those Tibetan concepts and talk about those. So that's the, all the lamas are on different levels. Some of them have more qualities. Some of us have less qualities. Some of them have more training. Some of us have less training, but we all do what we can to help the people who are suffering here in samsara. So believe it or not, that is the end of the questions for Lama Kathy. So if anybody has additional questions, you can type them in on Facebook. And if not, I will take a moment to introduce the topic that we're going to be talking about next, which is the topic of back to basics and talking about Buddhist basics, what Buddhists think and what they believe. And then also a little bit about more about the practices of meditation that we do. So not seeing any questions on the question roll up on the Facebook, I'll start with the with a short prayer, and then we'll talk a little bit about the path, the Buddhist path, and how it works. I'll recite a short prayer. If you're familiar with the prayer, the four-line refuge prayer, you can recite it along with. But if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can carry along with your thoughts and with your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to all sentient beings. Sanje chodon so chi chanam la chan chu badu tani chap su chi da ji jin so ji pe so nam ji dro la pen shi sanje dro par sho Sanje chodon so chi chanam la chan chu badu tani chap su chi da ji jin so ji pe so nam ji dro la pen shi sanje dro par sho Palin Sawilama Rinpoche Tagi Chiwar Pede Den Shula Kajin Chambu Gane Che Sunte Kusun Tugging a Trip Sal to Sun. Okay, thank you. So on the topic of back to basics, a lot of people come to our Dharma Center in Columbus and they say, well, Tibetan Buddhism is so huge. How could we possibly, what doorway do we go into? There's you see over on the shrine, there's all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. What's all that about? And all the prayers and mantras and meditation, like where do we even begin? And so I asked my teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, about this once. I said, well, how do we introduce people to something that's so huge? And he basically said, he said to make it very simple and to talk about mainly the practices that we do and talk about the practices from the point of view of the individual liberation of beings. That's called in the Sanskrit term is Hina Jnana. Then the second level of the Buddhist teachings is called Maha or greater Jnana or path. And then the third level is called Vajra Jnana or indestructible path. So he said that we should talk about it from the point of view of the three Jnanas or three paths. He said, as long as you keep it very simple, then he said it will be very easy for people to do. And additionally, he emphasized the practices of each one. And so if we look at the practices of the vehicle of individual liberation, which is sometimes called Hina or smaller vehicle or Jnana, if we look at the practices, they're all about gaining quietude in our minds, our own minds, and stability in our own minds, and an understanding of the causes of happiness on the one hand and the causes of suffering on the other hand, encouraging people to live moral and ethical lives so they do as much good as possible and avoid a wrong as much as possible. So it's actually pretty simple. The Hinayana or individual liberation path is about meeting us right here where we are. I remember when I first wanted to start practicing Buddhist meditation and I went to Kempo Carter Rinpoche and asked him for advice, he kept it very simple. He said, when your mind is uneasy, he said, think of the Buddha and supplicate the Buddha for help. And so for this old Catholic girl, he must have known that I was into praying because he gave me the practice I needed the most, which was prayer. And what was I praying to? I was not praying to a God somewhere. I was praying to my own highest nature in its completely ripened form, in the form of the Buddha. So that's what I started with. And then I also started with the practice of meditation because Rinpoche said, if you start with meditation, then you'll get to know your mind. And as you get to know your mind, then you'll be able to start working with it better. And so that's how we all start. We all start from a place of needing some quiet in our minds, needing some stability. That's why we start. It might seem like a selfish reason because it's just about me, me, me. I want stability for myself. I want quiet mind for myself. So it might seem really selfish at first, but we need to take that little bit of time to sit and meditate or to do walking meditation or chanting meditation. We need to do some form of letting the mind come to rest. And if we can begin to practice some form of the mind coming to rest, then from there we can begin to work with our minds. I guess you could say in a do-it-yourself fashion, because right now our minds are a little bit out of control. If one thing goes wrong, we fly into a rage, or if another thing goes wrong, then we're very sad. So what we need to do is make those reactions just a little bit less. And by making those reactions a little bit less, not a lot, just a little bit, then we can have some peace of mind and know what part of that is ours and what part of that is the other person's. So I think that's why the vehicle of individual liberation has to do with meditation, and it has to do with recognizing our patterns. In Kempo Carter Rinpoche's book, Dharma Paths, he said, In one of the chapters, he says we should all undertake an exercise when we first start meditating. And that exercise is writing down a list of our greatest obstacles. And I don't mean obstacles meaning my family is an obstacle or my work is an obstacle, not like that at all. But the things within us that stand between us and the people that we love, that stand between us and trying to be the person we want to be. So that's the first thing he said we should do when we're practicing this vehicle of individual liberation is make a list of the things that that we find about ourselves that we'd like to change. When I was teaching the pastoral care training program at our home monastery, KTD Monastery, I started everybody out with this exercise. And I said, when you want to help somebody, sometimes your own self gets in the way. Like maybe we want to help them our way and we don't want to help them their way and we're not open to that. Or maybe we're overly ambitious. We want them to change everything all at once, when really a slower approach would be better. So maybe we're impatient, maybe we're overly ambitious, and maybe we're sharp-tempered. Maybe we'd like to kind of change that a little bit. So because sometimes when we're sharp-tempered, people, what's that word? Walk on eggshells around us, and it's like they're afraid we're going to go off. So if we make a list of these things, Kemp Rinpoche says we get a couple of benefits from that. Number one, we'll know what we're up against. We'll know what we're trying to change and work on within ourselves. That's the first. But the second thing is, he said, we will no longer, if we have a list like this, we will no longer be surprised when somebody points out our faults and failings. In other words, if we've sat down and made up a list of all of our obstacles and obscurations and our faults and failings, then if somebody says, hey, you know, you're impatient, or, hey, you get mad real quick, or, hey, you're always doing this or that, I would say, oh, no problem. It's right here. It's number three, or it's number 12. So that way we don't get angry with other people pointing out our faults because we've already done it. So we shouldn't do this to give ourselves a free pass. Like, oh, yeah, I'm always going to be competitive and angry or whatever. So that's just me. It's not like that. We don't do it so that we can say, we're better than somebody else or that we're justified in being where we are. We actually make that list and then we start working on it. And to me, that's kind of, it's both hard and good. It's both difficult and constructive at the same time. So that's the first level of practice. The first level of practice is our individual liberation. The last part of that is understanding the cause of happiness and the cause of happiness and the causes of suffering. And so the Buddha, when he gave his initial series of teachings, a lot of those teachings were memorized by his students. And so they eventually were written down in a book that is called the Dhammapada, and this is my dad's copy. I gave a copy to my dad when he got into AA. I guess that's no secret, but he really loved 12-step literature, and he was always reading his 12-step literature. And I said, well, how about I give you, he said, I don't understand this Buddhist thing you're doing. I said, okay, Dad, let me give you a book of sayings, and maybe that will help. So I love reading my dad's notes. He writes down what was important to him. And so it's a way to spend time with my dad. He passed away in 2012, and I still miss him. But the teachings on knowing what's positive from what's negative, what's the cause of suffering from the cause of happiness, they're all in the book. He said, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow, unshakable. So what he's saying here is that with our thoughts, we're creating the experience we have of this world right here and right now. It's not under the power of anyone else other than us. And so, it cautions us to speak or act with a pure mind as opposed to an impure mind. And the difference between these two is selfishness. If we are acting in a self-centered way, that's a mind that is impure. It's called impure because it's only becoming more closed in on itself. If we've met selfish people in our lives, or if we've gone through periods where we've been very selfish, it's almost like we're closing down and becoming smaller and smaller and smaller, as opposed to the pure mind, which is the mind of selflessness, where we're opening to others. And so this is why he says that this grasping, this self-grasping, is the cause of unhappiness, and this selflessness is the cause of happiness. And so he's saying you actually have the power to create your atmosphere, your own atmosphere in your life, with what you do, think, and say. And I know that might seem like a lot, but it actually puts the power for happiness and suffering in our hand. Anybody who's read I'm trying to remember, there was a great writer who lived at the time of World War II, and he talked about man's search for meaning. It was the author of that book. And he said that when we work for the benefit of others, our own heart opens up. And when we work for the benefit of others, we have meaning in our lives. And so that's something that you can see that's in the literature of non-Buddhist thinkers. And they have the same idea of the causes of happiness and suffering. Now he's going to give an illustration of these two ways of thinking. First, he's going to talk about the way of suffering that comes from self-grasping. He's quoting a person who's thinking, and this person is thinking, look how that person abused me. Look how they beat me. Look how they threw me down and robbed me. Live with such thoughts and you live in hate. And then he says it again, look how he beat me and abused me. Look how he threw me down and robbed me. And then he said, abandon such thoughts and live in love. Now, he's not saying that we should tell the police they can all go home and that injustices should prevail. That's not what he's saying. He's saying we can dwell on injustice, and we can dwell on injustice in a positive way, and we can dwell on it in a negative way. And the positive way is, as my dad used to quote 12-step literature. Oh, thank you. That author was Viktor Frankl. Thank you. As my dad used to say, you have to live in the answer instead of living in the problem. When you're living in the problem, you're always worried about who did what to me, and I'm injured. And then, of course, then you naturally start thinking of revenge. And so instead of doing that, the Buddha is encouraging us to let go of thoughts of hatred, and rather live in the solution, which is how can we fix this situation? How can we bring justice to an unjust situation, and so on? And we have to be able to do that in such a way that we don't cause injustices while we are to ourselves, living in anger while we're trying to correct injustices in the world. I have a lot of friends who like to be politically active, and I feel that that's wonderful because we need people who can do that. At the same time, I always caution them to do their best to try to be a positive force in their community and world. And that if you can't solve a problem, the thing to continue to do is wish well for everybody who's involved in the situation. Shantideva, who lived in the 8th century, he had a quote. He said, if there is a solution to your problem, why worry? Why be upset? Because there's a solution. And then he said, if there is no solution to your problem, why worry? Why be upset? Because there's no solution. In other words, he's telling us not to hold ourselves hostage to hatred in any way, shape, or form. And so sometimes that means we leave a situation. If we can't find a solution to it, we have to leave it. So sometimes that happens. So this was the Buddha's teaching on the causes of happiness, which is the virtuous selfless mind, and the causes of suffering, which is the non-virtuous selfish mind. And so since he said that we have these powers within our own hands, essentially, this is why taming the mind through meditation is so important, because it slows down the process of thinking enough so that you can see what's really going on. And so next, the Buddha says, in this world, hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, ancient and inexhaustible. Then he says, you too, meaning the reader, you too shall pass away. Knowing that, how can you quarrel? And then he says, how easily the wind overturns a frail tree. Seek happiness in the senses, indulge in food and sleep, and you too will be uprooted. Meaning, if you pursue only sort of hedonistic pleasure and happiness, you will have no root inside you. You will have no meaning and a purpose inside you. And you'll be easily tossed about when external circumstances get bad. Then he said, the wind cannot overturn a mountain. Temptation cannot touch the person who is awake, strong, and humble, who masters themselves and minds the truth, meaning the truth of the cause of suffering and the truth of the cause of happiness. And so, but we'll stop with this for now. But the reason I bring all this up is because in our topic going back to basics, I'm covering the way Kempo Karth Rinpoche taught me how to teach the Dharma, which is to talk about the three levels of Buddhist teaching, and then how we practice in each of the levels of Buddhist teaching. So the first way of practicing is to practice a quiet sitting meditation and to practice good Buddhist ethics and morality, which means don't hurt yourself and don't hurt others, and instead be kind to yourself and be kind to others. And so that's, I think that's the main thing that I wanted to talk about under the topic of the first level of the Buddhist teaching. Next week, I'll talk about the second and third levels of the Buddhist teaching and how we in the Tibetan Buddhist community in the Karmakaju tradition practice those. And that way you'll get an idea of where you are in your own practice. If you're not doing meditation now, I would say try to establish a daily habit of sitting maybe 5 minutes. There are two kinds of meditators, the kind that when they first sit down, everything goes really well. And then the longer they sit, the worse it gets. And those people should sit for shorter periods, maybe twice a day rather than once. And then there's the other kind of person who, when they first sit down to meditate, their mind is everywhere. And the longer they sit, the better it works out. So they need to sit for a little bit longer period of time. And that's according to Kempo Rinpoche. He gave a teaching once on how to teach meditation. And he was saying that these two types of meditators exist and that we should advise our meditation students in accordance with this rule, that if a person's mind is more able to follow the technique at the beginning, but then it gets worse the longer they sit, that they should sit for shorter periods. And that if a person starts out great, I mean, starts out badly and they're all over the place, they have to sit long enough, a little longer until they get to the place where they feel some stability. So that's going to be a little bit about what we talk about next week. We're going to talk about the second level of the Buddhist teaching. We've talked about the Hinayana, or the path of individual liberation, today. And then next time we'll talk about the Mahayana, which is the path of compassion. And then the third topic will be the path of mantra and insight. So we'll talk about that next time. I see that we're coming up toward the top of the hour, and so I don't want to keep you for a long, long time. But I just want to be able to thank you for being with us today, and to give a little shout out to all of my friends at the Columbus, Ohio KTC. Thank you for joining. And we'll be back next week for another Dharma talk at 1 o'clock. And if you're interested in supporting the Columbus KTC, we're in the process of rebuilding our center, which was destroyed in an arson fire in 2016. So if you're moved to support us, while you are making your donations to the Red Cross and other health organizations, you can also go and make a small donation to Columbus KTC by going to columbusktc.org. Once again, if you have questions of any kind about anything, go ahead and send them. You can type them in the comments on the Facebook live stream, or you can email them to me at lamakathy@columbusktc.org, and I'll get them for next week. So do your best to do a little meditation this week, and then make your list. You know, make your list, because if we can make our list of the things that stand between us and being compassionate, standing between us and so forth, make that list. At least then you can say to your spouse or loved one, "Hey, honey, I've got a list, and it's not about you." So anyway, thanks. Thanks again. And we'll dedicate the merit of this session to all suffering beings, particularly those right now who are on the front lines of this illness, the people who are ill, as well as their friends and family, and also all of the people who are trying to help them, and all of the people who are working so hard to keep us safe. So while we're on home retreat for the next few weeks, let's try to meditate and try to make a little bit of progress on our spiritual path. I'm going to recite a short prayer, a dedication prayer in English, and you can join in your mind and heart, dedicating this session that we've just had together to the benefit of all beings. Through this merit, may all obtain the omniscience of awakening. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.